In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my very own Aleister Crowley, my very own warlock, my very own little tiny wizard who I keep in my pocket and pull out on just such occasions. The one, the only.
Double, double comic book trouble. Travis Ratz here.
Travis, I love the little laugh. I love the little laugh. Folks, you're here at the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis and I dig deep into graphic novels and or trades, whatever parlance you prefer to call them. Some people don't like the term graphic novel. Some people don't like the word trades. Some people don't like the term parlance. Yeah, some people just say call it comics, bro. Well, guess what? This is a comic book club, and you're here on Comic Exposure. And this month of February, this short February month, when the sun doesn't come out as much, when the bulls are super, Travis Ratz and I are bringing you some World War II books. So last time out, Baby's Day Out, we read Partisan out on TKO, and it just so happened that TKO was running a 2-for-1 special, and I said, well, hey, let's do it.
So this book, The Witches of World War II, it is written by Paul Cornell. The art is by Valeria Berzo, and then the coloring by the ever-present Jordi Belair is the colorist on this one. Travis, a World War II book to continue our journey of World War II with TKO. We read one, and we thought, you know what, TKO, you gave us a deal. Let's read another. Well, they didn't give you and I personally a deal. That would be weird. We're not. We're just...
No, it wouldn't, Josh. In fact, we've been doing a podcast now for many, many, many years. In fact, if more comic book studios did give us deals, we would probably read more of their comic books on this podcast.
You're probably right. You're probably right. I take that back, TKO. Give us all your books. So, this book, World War II, a World War II book without much war. More witches than Partisan, less war. The ratio has flipped, if you will. So,
No partisans in this book, only witches.
Yeah, yeah. So question for you, Travis Ratz. If you had to give me the IMDb tagline for this comic book, what would your sentence be? And he's just going to read it from the back.
No, I was going to, but I'm not going to. A group of occult-related real British figures team up to engage in espionage against Hitler's forces during World War II to keep Hitler from invading Britain. Magic, hijinks, and a little violence ensue.
There we go. There we go. You did it, Travis Ratz. This book takes a handful of characters, if you will. It takes, we've got Doreen.
I got him if you need him.
Oh, Doreen Valenti.
Yep.
Harold Gardner, Aleister Crowley, Dion Fortune, which sounds like a football player. And then Rollo Ahmed, our occultists, our witches, our wizards, our coven keepers in this World War II book. And it plays with this idea that some of these are true people. Some of these were around during World War II. I mean, they were all around during World War II, but they didn't meet in this way. And we're playing with this construct. It feels a little like the Alan Moore book, where he takes all the literary characters.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
This is League of Extraordinary Witches, and we're putting them all together to kind of, like you said, some subterfuge, some espionage, because in other media, we know of the Nazis' proclivity for pursuing like occult items or religious items, right? So you think about Hellboy.
The Lost Ark. Yeah.
The Lost Ark in Indiana Jones. Hellboy, the Holy Grail in Indiana Jones. Maybe that's all I know about Nazis I learned from Indiana Jones, the Nazi love of the occult. But this book, it's a talkie, right? That's the best way, yeah, I think to put this book is it's not very actiony. It's not very, there's not humor in it. But it is very much a character study, a character piece where we're following these different witches and wizards around as they are coming together. I would say like the first third of the book, rounding each other up. And the two thirds after that are like little secret missions they do. And then the big wrap up of the whole thing. And I want to talk to you a little bit about Travis Ratz. When this book was on the list, like, hey, these two came together, let's get this. I was expecting less historical reality. Does that make sense?
Yes, I understand what you're saying, because it's got a great title.
Yeah.
You think it's almost going to be like, oh, I don't know, like some night nurses who in like the British Army who like cast spells and like are in the woods and like changing bullets to like flower petals and stuff like that. You know?
Exactly.
No, I get it. I mean, this book isn't, I mean, you were like, hey, we're going to pick up these two books. And I said, got it, Josh, put them in my cart, and then didn't open it up until it was reading time. And
yeah,
I at first, like you said, it's a talkie. So I was hit by it, and I kept waiting for the shoe to drop, being like, okay, but when does it get real witchy? You know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't till the end when I was reading the afterword where I was like, I knew Crowley obviously is a real historical figure, but the other three I did not know were real historical figures. One of them was even the guy who started like Gerald Wicca, who started like Wiccan, like was a huge part in like starting that idea of like what Wiccan became. And I even looked a little bit further on there. That cone of power thing they're doing, there is documentation that he did that in World War II. Like he would get witches together in his coven and go out to the woods and do this cone of power thing in hopes of keeping Hitler at bay and not invading the British Isles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for me, I almost wish that should have been the foreword instead of the afterword. But I thought that was really cool. And it made me start thinking about fictional history in comic book form, which I want to talk about a little bit later. But really in this reading of it and going back to kind of like our World War II, I find it really fascinating with this war is I think it just shows how bad this war was and how desperate people became. All governments were looking for anything for an advantage, anything for an advantage. So it was just like, it wasn't just air, water, you know, it wasn't just land, water, and sea. It was like, okay, a cult or this or what, you know, whatever it is. It was like, you know, by any means necessary. So it's kind of a cool reminder of like, oh, everyone in the world was just desperate to have an end to this thing or to keep from being invaded, you know? And so you turn to magic. Or you turn to folklore.
And you turn to Churchill eating baby hearts. Right? Yeah. Like, it is this very, like, it's interesting. Like, so I was trying to, like, I think like you, I was trying to figure out, like, what is this story doing, right? Is it going to go off the rails? Because I, you know, it does, you know, like, based on the back, it says, like, inspired by a true story. The Witches of World War II follows a coven of witches, right? And you're like, okay, it's based on a true story. There's going to be some weird stuff. So I kept waiting for, like you said, that shoe to drop and waiting for that, the big magic, right? I don't know why. I don't know what it was, but it ended up being a very sort of like I feel like with a little more goofiness, it's almost Coen Brothers-esque, right?
Yeah, like, or like Coen Brothers. It's like comic books meets Bridge of Spies meets Coen Brothers.
Right? Like it just needs like, it just needed a hair more like weirdness in order for me to go like, oh, it's Fargo, but with, you know what I mean? Like very talky, not a lot of action, but like just weird. And this was weird, right? Like you've got Aleister Crowley, you've got the Nazis with the, you know, like it's the Holy Grail. If you drink from the Grail and sputter, that means you're lying, right? Like this whole scene, near the end with Crowley and the Holy Grail. And it's a lot of like meeting these weird characters, right?
Right.
And kind of clumping them together. But then when they get together, there isn't a big to do, right? Like that's not happening. I expected more of a, like, here's the set piece. Here's the big espionage, but it almost felt like the writer was like, no, this isn't about like that piece of it. It's not like, well, I'm going to talk to you about, yeah, we went and we did this thing at this camp, like, you know, at this, you know, Nazi installation, but that's not really what this is about. Right.
Right. Yeah. Well, I do appreciate in some ways the attempt of being toned down when talking about World War II, because you think about it, when we think about the real life heroes from World War II and things like that, if we didn't know his history, it feels like it could have been fictionalized history. Like think of, for example, the Wind Talkers, right? Native American code talkers.
Code talkers.
Yeah. Yeah. Code talkers. Is it Wind Talkers? Code talkers. Or like Tuskegee Airmen, right? Like these kinds of groups of people, they're like, that really happened? And they're like, oh yeah, that really happened. And so to kind of explore like, okay, maybe these events did not take place this way. These people may or may not have even known each other at this time. These four occult associated people, but they were all real people. And it's almost like a tale in how history happens, like coincidence and luck and chance and serendipity and bravery and right place, right time, right place, wrong time, you know, those kinds of things on there. So just watching how one event sets off the next event. And then of course, in the end, no one can know that they were the ones responsible for this big victory, which ultimately had one of Hitler's like second in command,
captured
and, you know, interrogated and information being given that what we can assume helped them win some battles and maybe even ultimately win the war. So there is this sense of looking at, you know, what are these books that we read all the time? I mean, we love the stories of a small band of individuals making a huge difference. And if you can make them go unrewarded for that, that's kind of what heroes are, right?
Right.
So from that standpoint, I was like, okay, I understand going understated. I mean, part of me, of course, wishes, like from last week, we had a little Ennis writing this, because then I think that would amp up what you're talking about. Like he would drop the other shoe at some points in this. He would have like a 6 pages of like that baby being actually sacrificed, watching it, you know, that someone, you know, sacrifices baby, and you're just like, oh my God, this is so over the top. And here it's just like, this whole book never suggests that magic is real or not real.
And I think that I would tell you that I think that that's almost the interesting part, right? Because we're dealing with Doreen, the main character, and her struggle with, like, she's very fascinated by the occult. She studies it, but she doesn't really believe in it, right? So every time she meets these wizards or witches or warlocks or whatever you want to call them, they're like, you don't believe? And she's like, no, not really. Like, she's skeptical. Like, I'm skeptical reading this history, right? Like, this really, you know what I mean? So I think that that's an interesting take. Is the idea of like, well, here's this person who doesn't believe in this. We're going to thrust her in this world. And then she has to navigate these people who are so certain, or some of them are so certain that it's real. And then another one's like, no, I'm a con man, right? Like, yeah. I just happen to do this, right? So it's a really, I think the idea of it and the kind of take on World War II is an interesting place to be. It plays with something, like I said, that we see in other media, with sort of like Hitler and the occult. And I bet you if you watched the History Channel at some point in the early 2000s, there were several documentaries about Hitler and the Nazis and the occult, or the SS and the occult. I mean, you know, like Wolfenstein, the, you know, quintessential video game of my early youth was, you know, the Nazis in hell and monsters and all of that. And you're like, okay, yeah, no, that tracks, right? Like what we know about it. I think the setup was leading, and we get there, and the big act doesn't happen until issue 6. And that's a little troublesome for me. I expected there was a lot of buildup, and then it all kind of happens in that last issue. And I think that the pacing, I think, seemed a little off for it. But
I wanted some mid-story set pieces in there.
Yeah.
I agree with that. It's a lot of office spaces and government buildings and things like that, where they're just kind of, and they're not even talking about magic in like a cool or like out there kind of way. It's just very like, it's bureaucracy and espionage, and it's weird. Like we were talking, and then we can get away from this. And we might have talked this point to death, but to go back to your point about like the tone of this, so many of those History Channel shows or the things you were talking about, they will use occult and magic when talking about Hitler to kind of zhuzh up an episode in history to get people watching it. Right. And here it's like, well, you got it right on the cover, which is a World War II. And it's almost like they're using the government bureaucratic stuff to like temper down the witchcraft. You know, it's like the exact opposite. It's like, oh, we're going to get like, you're going to mainline us magic and occult in World War II. And they're like, no. We're going to temper all that with this. And I think that's why, you know, you were saying you don't get that big.
Yeah.
When I say big, I mean, that's even hyperbole there, because even the climactic moment is more, it's not even as climactic as the Holy Grail scene in, you know, Last Crusade. Yeah. It's reminiscent of that, but it certainly doesn't have the pageantry of it. They're not in some cave. They're in, I'm guessing, which was a real castle in this book. If you haven't read it, there is, you know, you have Berlin, and then you have, you know, like where Hitler is or wherever Hitler is like fortified. And then you had this other like castle, and this castle is where all the occult and religion stuff that Hitler wanted to kind of start developing, you know, kind of for his new world order to be the capital of that. Right. So it's kind of like twin cities almost. And I'm guessing, I don't know enough about history to know if that castle is a real place and if that's what the purpose is for.
You live in Germany, Travis. You could go to...
Okay, well, we don't need to like start pointing fingers at people.
You could go to...
You're a history teacher, Josh.
You could go to Wellwisburg right now and go find out if there's a castle there. But I thought that
piece... Oh, God, that's good. I'm going to do that, Josh. Now I'm going to do this off air.
I thought that whole scene where she's meeting like the occult leader of the Third Reich... Like the guy who's going to be in charge of the church, he's like, "Yeah, we're writing a new Bible. We're taking all the Jews out of it. We're going to lean into like, you know, the Übermacht, right? Like we're going to really lean into this idea." And I was like, "Okay, all right, I can dig that sort of like, let's heighten this piece of it. You've got this cool castle. You've got this kind of." This guy who's in charge of it. And then ultimately that leads to the scene that is the final moment where they all have to drink from the grail because he had his cards read and found out that one of the witches was a traitor, right? In reality, they're all traitors.
Right.
So that's the other piece, is it plays with this idea of like, magic's not real. It's not real. This baby heart might not even be an actual baby heart. It might be something else, right? The whole thing is faked by Churchill, but she thinks it's real. Then she gets a letter that's like, hey, thanks for that. I think people really think you tried to kill me. So that'll look good when you go talk to the Nazis, right? Thanks, yeah. Winston Churchill. So like, it's everybody's playing with Doreen's belief in magic. Right. In their own way. Even the government is fabricating or using her, I don't really believe in it, in a way to get her more and more involved in it, right?
In certain ways, it feels kind of like a heist, right? Doesn't it feel like kind of like a heist setup on there, like an Ocean's 11 where everyone has their own talent, but they're all skeptical of each other and we're like, we don't know who to believe. So I want to talk to you about Aleister Crowley, right? Who's probably the person we know the most in this. I looked it up. He died in 1947, right?
Yeah.
But there is, you know, with the history of Aleister Crowley, there is people who still believe he's still alive. And then there's like, no, he didn't die in 47. He was here in the 60s and he was part of the acid revolution and all this. And you have the disciples. In fact, being a disciple of Aleister Crowley is kind of like a running gag in this book, where Doreen's like, I'm not a disciple. And then the other guy's like, I'm not a disciple. You know, like no one wants to be associated with this guy, but he really is our Danny Ocean, right? Like, is he going to betray the gang to like get back with his girlfriend or to take the money, or is he really lost it? So what do you think about Crowley? Did you know anything about Crowley before this? Like history readings and stuff?
Not really. I mean, like, you know, the name, but not a whole lot about it. But I do like, you know, the back matter that we talked about, you know, that you said, like, man, I kind of wish that kind of would have been in the beginning of it. I think it lost that. And if I can, the Ocean's 11 or like, what's his name? Lock, Stock and Two, with Guy Ritchie, sort of like, you'd get the hard pan to who that person was. And then the voiceover would be like, Aleister Crowley, blah, 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 blah. He's the blah, blah,
and
blah,
he would do blah, something blah, like throw a sandwich at like a sandwich cart guy, you know?
Like, who is he? Right? Or he'd be shooting up heroin in the bathroom and doing tarot cards, right? Like,
that's good, Josh. It's missing coolness.
And I don't want to say that it is missing a little bit of panache. I don't know how, like, there's something about, like, this story that I don't think it leaned into the weirdness of it or the characterness of it enough. Like, all the bones are there. It's interesting take. It's an interesting story. We built this thing. It has this nice big sort of culminating moment at the end. But I didn't know a whole lot about Aleister Crowley, but he's the one that I latched onto the most because he seemed, I don't know, the goofiest, and they fleshed him out the most, I thought, of all the other characters.
Right. He is like, as you're talking, it hit me, and I don't know what to think about this. Do you think, I like the book. Like, I don't regret reading the book at all. Yeah. And I think it fits really well with World War II. And like, I get to know about this kind of like these people I didn't know about. But are we having a harder time being like gushing over or finding our way into it because it's not one clear genre? I mean, especially in this, our previous year of comic exposure, we read really like deep cuts of genres, almost like subgenres of things. And this, it's not, we're talking around it, but we're having a hard time putting our finger on, is this espionage? Is this witchcraft? Is this a heist? Is this a battle book? Is this, you know, whatever it is?
Yeah.
And part of me respects the fact that like, you know, like maybe they're like, you know, just telling a story. So if you don't have a genre, what do you have? You have interesting characters or an interesting plot. So if we can't, we've read genre pieces that have horrible plots, really basic characters, but because we love the genre, we're like, oh, okay, right? Actually, we did a couple, I wouldn't say hate. We had a couple last year, they're like, yeah, it was okay. Because the genre was so, like, take something like Callie, right?
It carried, you know, the genre carried the story, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So if we remove the genre from this, which we can't pinpoint on there, it's like, what steps up? There is, I think, for me, some good theoretical conversations in here about the nature of belief in something and the nature of a con, which I think it could probably have someone move through this book and find enjoyment. Just some of the theoretical conversations that these occult people have around belief and how to weaponize that. So I think that was kind of where this conversation is taking me. Is if I walked away from this book and someone said, "Oh, what do you think?" And I was like, "Well, I think it's kind of an interesting take on some of the theoretical conversations you can have on the power of belief and how can you use that on like a major global scale to the point of now it's a weapon in World War II."
Yes. Yeah, and I think it's also this idea of, like, continues to play with her own issues around belief, right? What does she believe in? She's lost her husband. She's struggling to kind of, like, you know, she's mad at the Nazis for that. But she's also, like, she uses that anger about her husband dying to help her tell the truth when she has to drink the cup, right? When she has to drink from it. You know, so there's all these little pieces about belief and its effect on us and what we adhere to. And it's sprinkled through this story of, I think that it we have these characters, but we don't spend enough time with some of them and we spend a lot of time with other ones. And then part of me goes like, well, why is that character in it if they're not a key part of this, right? But it's this kind of, you said it at the beginning, it's this kind of ragtag group of occultists who are thrown together to save the British government or to act as espionage at the highest level because they know, you know, the Nazis have this, you know, this desire to own every part of the world, religion, magic, you know, all of this stuff, not just land and power, but belief, right? Like the Nazis want to control belief. And so they'll use whatever means they can. And so I found it kind of interesting. And there's a part of me where I go, if it leaned just a little harder on any of these things, whether that's genre or character or set piece, I think it would have heightened it even more. Right.
I mean, it would have made it more of a page turner.
Right. Because it's very interesting. I think if I could say, I think this is one of those things where we talk and sometimes we go like, this would make a great movie or this would make a great TV show.
It's like Slow Horses. It's like the Gary Oldman show, you know,
or this would make, I'm going to tell you, I think at the end you have someone talking about writing historical fiction and how a comic book lets you do that in a different way.
Yeah.
I think this would be a far better novel.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know what I mean by that, but to
can I ask you this? If this really happened, right. In the sense of it, because all of this could theoretically happen. Nothing really magic happens that you can't write off.
Yeah.
And you were reading about this. Someone came out with a nonfiction history book, a researcher, 400-page book about this, where it was like the witches of World War II. And they just laid it out like the facts here, kind of like on here. Like, oh, there's Doreen. They went here. And then, you know, they linked up on a boat vessel and they were, you know, were able to go onto the submarine and they went to this facility. And we don't know exactly what happened here, but we have letters. We think a grail was involved. I think it would be a bestseller.
What's the one that takes like Murder in a White City? What's the,
A Larson book. Eric Larson.
Yeah. Eric Larson does all those books.
Yeah.
This feels like let Eric Larson write this tale. And I think because then it would have leaned in on the history, or I think you got to lean in on big character. And I think that's hard to do in 6 issues of a comic book.
Right.
So we're moving fast through getting to know characters, but it's a slow burn of a book. Does that make sense?
You're absolutely right. And also what a lot of those historical account books will do, well, they'll take a real historical event and they'll kind of like write it out more prose style. Is that they will pick an event that pick something that is heavily related to something in current society. And they will kind of always be drawing lines to it. So you're like, oh, the past isn't the past. These things happen in cycles on here.
Yeah.
I didn't see a lot. I mean, other than just belief and things, and they talk about prophets and false prophets and charisma and charm and the huckster nature of getting people to be on board, which certainly is apropos for today, but like drawing stronger lines between
the Trump Bible and then this, you know what I mean? Can you draw those lines? No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. So let's switch gears a little bit. We often like to talk about the art in here, and I will tell you, the art is probably what kept me going, right? That kept me coming back to this. And we talk a lot about this art style of like realistic cartooning. I don't know how else to kind of like frame it. Valeria
Borges feels very, the pencils feel very Love and Rockets. Strangers in Paradise.
Strangers in Paradise, yeah. Yeah, it does feel very, why can't I think of his name? I've got to have.
Terry something.
Yes.
Terry Gross, NPR.
Yes, Terry Gross from NPR. Like, no, but like, I think that's the thing is the art is this piece where it kept me coming back to go like, okay, it is giving me a good visual, right? And it's like a movie that's shot bad. If the story's not grabbing you, but it doesn't look good, you're not gonna read it. The same thing here when we talk about Terry Moore,
good.
Motor Girl, yeah. When we talk about, you know, comic books, art will pull me along when the story drags. And art pulled me along in this when the parts of the story just dragged a little bit or the transition felt a little weird. The art kind of pulled me along in it to go like, okay, where is this going? I know it's going to go somewhere. What is this building to, right? And the art kind of took me along in there. I really, again, we talk about Jordy Belair's colors. We get some of that.
Obviously really tight with TKO Studios. I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean.
Doing a couple of books for him.
Girl's got to work, right? So she's, but I really did enjoy the art in this. The facial expressions of Doreen throughout are great, right? She's shocked. She's horrified. She's scared. She's angry. We get that over and over again. And then plus, you know, the art from Burzo in here, that's a hairdo that you have to draw over and over and over again.
Yep.
I want to know, like, is there a picture of her with this hair? I didn't look her up, but this is a very specific hairdo that looks like horns. And
it's not flattering.
I wonder if that's like, is there a photo of her rocking that hair? Or is that just a choice by the artist to go, I'm going to do a weird 30s hairdo that looks like horns. That's what I'm leaning into.
You're right. The art is, I really do enjoy the art in this, and it can help you get through some of the slower parts. I wonder if the easiest, I don't want to say fix, there's nothing wrong with this book, right? But for more, I think to keep it, the story happening in reality, like it could happen, but we're talking about witches. There's an opportunity as they're talking about things that aren't happening, but that are occult, is that the panels can show it, right? If you were talking about like something that Alistair, I heard you did this. And then we see like what the thing he was like, oh, remember when you killed a demon in this world in the middle of London and you convinced everyone that you did. And like, oh, we see those panels of that or something like that, you know, in the sense of using the comic book medium for those asides, artistically where you can hyperbolize those some things, the magical elements in things art wise, to help kind of fill in for those missing set pieces.
And I think that happens very early on, and only, or I think playing with the medium happens when she's tripping out during the fire, yep. Right? We see her kind of see all that as they throw that stuff in the fire. But someone's like, oh yeah, no, that wasn't anything weird. It was just blah, blah, blah. Like, no, it's definitely, you're definitely tripping balls, right? And then later she's having that nightmare with the demon baby, and then that's it, right? It happens two times in the whole book where we get this kind of like, let's play with what we can do with this medium, right? Let's do some.
One pill makes you larger and one pill makes you small.
Yeah, and there's just this sort of nature of it where we're not getting a ton of that. But in reality, like, I think that's not what this book is, right? This book is supposed to be the, like, I think if I
the release can, the release document files. That's what it feels like. It feels like decommissioned, declassified files that we're telling in a comic book form.
Right. And it feels like the author is particularly on the side of magic isn't real, right? Because he's kind of continually undercutting that idea with going like, that's not real, blah, 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 blah. Let's heighten this thing up. But the grail's not real. Let's heighten this. Right. So I think the intention then is to steer away from what would be considered hyperbolic or extreme in the art and the writing, because he's taking this idea of like, look, this was a means to defeat the Nazis. That Hitler didn't really believe in it. He just wanted people to believe in it, right? You've got that scene of Hitler and his like the religious guy, and is like, oh yeah, whatever, that's cute, right? Like, this, even Hitler doesn't believe in it. Yeah. He just wants it for power. And so you essentially have, if I feel like I'm reading it, that the author of this doesn't believe in this idea of the occult or witchcraft either, but it's an interesting aspect to go like, let's play with this in World War II, but let's not treat it as Hellboy. Let's not treat it as, you know, actual witches. Let's just play with it as what it is, right? What's the Coen brothers movie with the goats? The Men Who Stare at Goats, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Isn't that the code?
Yeah,
right?
It's called Men Who Stare at Goats, yeah.
It feels like that sort of like, hey, here's this weird thing. It didn't lean into it enough for me about how weird it was. I think that's the only thing it's missing, is just a little more conviction about, yeah, this is weird. This is goofy. Let's play it, right?
Yeah. But some more humor could have, like Men Who Stare, it could have coned it up a little bit more. And I really don't want to leave this podcast saying we do this sometimes, and it's not because we don't like the book. It's because we're just like, oh, we've read so much, and we're like, oh, you know, it's almost like this, and it's almost like this. And it's kind of refreshing to be like, it's almost a lot of things, which makes it its own thing. And if you're into that, if you're into like a slower burn where they're trying to bring in as much historical fiction as possible, then I think this is an interesting read.
I enjoyed it, right? I'm sorry if like, I don't mean for my critique of it to mean that I didn't enjoy it. I think that story and the content is an interesting piece, but I will say that it feels like I want it explored more and deeper. Right? Like that's the thing. I want this book to, I want, give me another, I don't know if another six issues would be enough, but a couple more issues to just dive into these characters a little more, build a little more of this world. And I think you and I have talked about this before, whether it's TKO or whether it's DC doing those Black Label books or whatever it is, you've pigeonholed yourself into going, nope, it's six issues. It's one story. Nope, Black Label books are three issues, double size. Tell your story. When in reality, or you can even take it back to like, remember all those Marvel shows on Netflix, and you're like, did it have to be eight? You could have done it. You know what I mean? Like, you found this number because it's a trade, and a trade is six issues, and that's what we're giving you. And I go like, ooh, it might've been better as eight. Eight might've done it, right? Or you could have trimmed a bit out and done a good four, and it might've really given you what you wanted. And I think it's less.
It's the exact same as a partisan.
Yeah. They're all six issues, all the same page length. So part of me goes, I think it's the medium, no pun intended, that messes up that maybe puts a hitch in the storytelling of this book. But I thought it was interesting. I like the idea of it. It makes me want to kind of go, ooh, is there an actual nonfiction book about this that I could pick up and put into my rotation?
What you said there makes me think about, like, I wonder if publishers need to start treating these creative teams like the way they do directors. Like Paul Thomas Anderson got to make like an almost 3-hour movie with one battle after another. Meanwhile, someone else comes out with like an hour and 45 minute movie. It's like when they pitch the story, they need to pitch like, honestly, like how many pages do you think you need to have this in? Of course, they're going to go over and under. I mean, that's what just happens when you don't have the full thing written on there. But as opposed to like what you were saying, I think that's really important. And I wonder what that looks like in a publishing house like TKO when, you know, they're either hearing a creator's pitch or they're asking a creator to write something for them. It seems, especially in the world of comics, six issues seems so arbitrary.
Well, I think it's like, I wonder if it's the idea of price point, right? Like, well, if we're going to charge for a graphic novel, it should have this many pages. And because TKO is in this realm of publishing both single issues and trades at the same time, right? You can buy them either way. It would mean that the price for this book would either have to be more than their other books, page count, or it would have to be less than their other books because of page count, right? Because they're stuck in the system of a graphic novel, our trades are six issues. And the publishing cost means we can charge this much for a six issue book.
Yeah. And do you think some of that is just as mundane as like, hey, the printing machines are set to bind books with this many pages. If we went over like by 50 pages, we'd have to recalibrate and have a separate machine and we can't afford that. So I don't know.
Or the price point's off, right? You think about, I mean, I know that we're changing this whole context of this into publishing rather than something else, but I'm curious, like, so DC started doing all of those manga sized takes, like manga sized versions of The Killing Joke and The Dark Knight Returns and different, you know, Hush and all of these different books. And those are literally, Travis, the top of the 2025 selling for graphic novels. Like a majority of those, like top 20 books or whatever it is, I saw a thing on it. A majority of them were those versions.
How much are those? What's the price point on those?
$10.
Dude, that's like a classroom set. You could get a class. You could teach that.
Because the publishing size, you've shrunk the publishing size. So that means the cost goes down, right? So this is a big book. It is a different size, right? It is larger than others. And I wonder if just the publishing of it goes, nope, you've got to tell your story in six issues. That's what this is. That's our publishing. That's what we put, like, this is the cost that we do on it. This is how we can pay you on this. And I wonder if that puts a hamstring in some storytelling where, when we look at a guy like, you know, Ennis, who's been writing forever, right, comes along and goes like, oh yeah, I can fit form to this. I'll write a story that adapts to that length. Wrote single issue comics, 24 to 22 pages. They made a career on that. And I wonder if when you take that and you go, no, we're going to limit you to this. You know, I think of like the, you know, Jock did one of those distillery books, three issues. Mm-hmm. And the pacing just wasn't right. And I go, I wonder if it's just, just not used to writing in that limit. When you go like, okay, Jeff Lemire wants to put a graphic novel out, he just writes it. And whatever the size is, that's the size of it. Underwater yeah. Welder is one size because that's the size required to tell that story. I've got another book of his, Roughneck, on my shelf, different size, plus way more pages because that's what he needed to tell that right. story. And we're not limiting story to this many pages is all you get.
Brewbreaker's like that too.
Yeah. So overall thoughts, which is a World War II. Interesting concept.
I think it's a really good companion to its other TKO companion, Partisan. The Jordy Belair colors really kind of pair them well nicely together. I mean, I read these back to back, and it felt like with that color scheme, even though the pencils were different, it felt like I was in this, I mean, I'm in the same era of history, but it almost grounded. It's weird. They kind of ground each other in different ways.
I get that.
Partisan is much more grounded in the reality of what they're talking about, but the things that happen are more outrageous. Meanwhile, which is a World War II, is more outrageous than the things they're talking about, but it's grounded in a way. So together, back to back, you're just like, I leave it with being like, man, World War II, I mean, you had the full spectrum, man. You had everything. Like everything in the kitchen sink, man, was just like in this war as far as tones and like different types of people. I mean, these people in this book, if we're taking this as like a history, we're happening the same time that Alexandra was over in the Soviet Union, you know, doing this thing. And you're just like, it's two completely different worlds, but it is one world. And it just kind of brings me to this idea of World War II is like the social economics of the whole thing. Different people that were of the same time period, but because of social economics and religion and politics, they were vastly different. They might have been living hundreds of years apart because of how their country of origin was developed and interacted. And it just makes you realize the 1940s was a real crux of cultures and developing countries and technology.
Yeah. You think about in this book, Doreen is like at a dinner party in a castle after traveling on a submarine in a train. And then you've got Alexandra living in the woods, fighting Nazis and
stuff. Like lighting candles. Like there's like no electricity. She's like carrying on a candle.
Yeah.
You know? And that to me was kind of a trippy on there. So as far as the World War II pairings, I think it's pretty good. And correct me if I'm wrong, Josh, as we move out of this, do we have one more two? Are we still gonna read that other one?
One more book to kind of put a bow on this. Another war story, not World War. Well, I guess it's World War II, but it's not World War II. So as this book came out, as these came out, we read these, a book that I've wanted to do, but didn't want to wait till June, because that's when the trade comes out, is in June, because Image loves to finish a book and then 4 months later put the trade out. Remember when they used to, remember when Image would go, hey, issue 6 came out or issue 5 came out, the trade came out the next week?
Yeah,
Travis, they don't do that anymore.
Oh yeah,
they don't.
Yeah,
they gotta wait.
You know what? We read a lot more Image books back then.
We did read a lot more Image books. So here's what we've got next on the agenda. Right, the next book that we're going to read is Escape out on Image Comics. It is a war book. It is Rick Remender as the author and Daniel Acuna doing the art on it. But Travis and I have to read it in single issues, and timing is important because the last issue of this book, issue 6, the last part of this trade, comes out the last Wednesday in February. So as our final book for February will be fresh off the shelves as we read it. So I'm reading issues 1 through 5 right now, so that when that Wednesday comes out, I can get it on the old Kindle and read the last issue and be ready to talk about it that last week in February.
And it's definitely going to work out, because if there's one thing that the comic book industry is known for, it's for their punctuality of publications. So we're in the paint on that one. Like, we know that it's going to come out on that day. Maybe we can even just like set up like half an hour after the release day, because it's like Tokyo trains, man.
Yeah, it's good. They run on time.
And if they don't, you will be hearing our final World War II book in early March.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in, folks. Thanks for listening. You can find the show over on the internet at comicexposure.com. All the episodes there, or you can find all the episodes on your favorite podcast app, whatever that is. We have resurrected the Instagram. The Instagram is alive.
It looks good, well, Josh.
There are some things that are being posted on there. I am in an office job that gives me less stress these days. So I found one way to decompress is to share the random books from my shelf, to share the books that we are reading, and then also to kind of share a little bit of what we got going on the pod.
Can I tell you something that I saw on there that made me smile? I was like, I check our Instagram because I'm always curious on what's on there, because Josh puts up cool stuff on there. Is Josh did this post where he like went into our, I'm guessing it's the show's long box.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we've had over like, you know, 300 episodes over these years. And so like a book that I'd forgotten we'd done, which was the Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman. Yeah. By Box Brown. Yeah,
I forgot the title of that. I would not, if you had to guess me, if you said, hey, we read an Andy Kaufman book, I'm like, I remember that. Like, what is the title of that book? I would have been like, I would not.
Man of the Moon. No, it's Man of the Moon.
No, yeah, yeah, no, Man of the Moon. REM. Yeah.
So you can tune in. You can see I will pull episodes from the long box. I think comics come out on Wednesdays. I think Thursday's long box days or Tuesday's long box days. And we'll pull an episode from the long box to share on the Instagram if you want to check that out. I had someone I know outside of comic books was like, because I finally shared this on my own Instagram. And someone was like, dude, I listened back. He's like, I've been going through old episodes and finding books that I've read that you guys have done and been listening along. I was like, that's perfect. That's great. Right. Because
I do that all the time for movies.
So I think this is a good, opportunity. If you're, you're new to the podcast, go find that Instagram. It's at Comic Exposure.
And we had a facelift too. Josh been on it. We got a facelift we got a new, if you're scrolling through your podcast feed and you're like, where, I got to change it here now too. Where's my little Godzilla Ramon character? We cleaned it up. We went clean. We went corporate. Clean.
We went corporate. It does look very corporate. And this is what happens when you work in an office. Everything you do becomes corporate. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in, folks. Thanks for being here. And Travis Ratz and I will see you with Escape on the next episode. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next trade.